SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Obviously, a momentous day for the country, always. And I imagine Sid and I might... reserve some thoughts for Sid when he joins us in hour two. Sire Watch, Bennett Refocus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Got a busy-ish morning and starting to look ahead to opening day at Oaklawn. Next couple of days, really the next three with weekend preview on Friday. And Dave Hill, not today, tomorrow. Dave Hill tomorrow. I know I dangled a Dave Hill visit. It'll be tomorrow, and looking forward to it. It's become a tradition. It started when he was working on the Vapors, and you know, now he's fairly immersed into Oaklawn coverage, the Hot Springs native, and so... particularly suited to the lifestyle and the history. He's so tuned into the unique nature of Hot Springs. I'm sure they're getting excited. I have not actually looked ahead to see how the weather might cooperate. Not that there's going to be the opportunity for the general public, but you know, we still want conditions to be comfortable and good and not inclement. And so, it is time to put Hot Springs back into the, you know, I don't know about you, but you got your whatever app you use for weather. I got a couple of them, and you know, as seasons move around the country, you got to bring the venue back into your phone. So now they're talking rain on Friday. Look at that, 87%. Nice day on Saturday though, and then some more rain on Sunday. But all right. In fact, it's rain today, tomorrow, and Friday. It looks wet at Oaklawn. So keep that in the back of your mind. And as we get closer, we'll talk to Hammer, of course, as well. And we're going to have one conversation this hour. Emily Gullickson is going to join us. And Emily is, as you know, is, if you follow on Twitter and have gotten involved with Optics EQ, she is kind of the guru and the front person that kind of leads people and explains to people the product. I've touched on it a couple of times with Ed. And in fact, Ed's on later today in hour three. Ed DeRosa, we'll find out how his birthday was. Hope you wished Ed a happy birthday. I wanted Emily because she's going to utilize the Optics and do some Oaklawn handicapping this season. And so there's a lot potentially to glean. So I wanted to get a little bit of a background on it. And Emily's never been on. She's been a presence certainly around the handicapping and has got had a good opinion even before getting involved with Optics. And so I'm looking forward. Get a chance to talk to her. Pete's going to swing through. We haven't talked to Pete yet the first 2 weeks. So Pete Fornatale will get Pete through and see how first couple of weeks of the year has treated him. And I know that some contest interests are front and center. You got Pegasus draw later today, and you can start to look at that card on Saturday. And in fact, for those that haven't seen the lineup, I'll mention it again. In addition, of course, to the main track and the turf race, you've got the Hooper and the Inside Information, the Prevaillant, the Marshawes River, and the McKnight. So nice set of seven stakes, and I'm sure some nice supporting undercard action, probably a three-year-old maiden or allowance. Might be a little late, obviously, to get involved in the Holy Bull in a couple of weeks, but, moving down the road toward things like Fountain of Youth, etc. So the weekend pretty much focused around Gulfstream and Oaklawn. The Palos Verdes on Saturday at Santa Anita, so they'll draw that today. But if you haven't looked yet at the two, first two cards at Oaklawn, Hammer and I were talking about it on Monday. And I printed up the Saturday card as well as Friday, and the Fifth Season and the Pippin on the stakes front. But the maiden race that kind of starts the late action, the second half of the card, the pick five, there's actually one for fillies at the end of the day going six, and one for the boys that starts the pick five. So maiden specials to bracket the late pick five at Oaklawn. There's an allowance in here in between as well for three-year-olds, but going short doesn't feel like these are Southwest types, Rebel Path types in this, at least for now. So a very nice sequence already set for Saturday at Oaklawn. So we're going to start to go in that direction. I'm looking forward to getting Marty McGee on as well, not today, but tomorrow or Saturday, and Mike Welch, of course, as well. So there's also, since we're talking about what's going on this weekend, and I thank Ed for reminding me, because yesterday I never even saw it, didn't even see the press release, for the next round of Derby Futures. And so probably go through that with Ed, actually. And we'll see about what names were added. Always, always interesting. The team that puts them together, and they kind of dig for, horses with upside. So, just glancing at it here. Yeah, there's a few names that are going to be new to people. Recent maiden winners. Baffert already with Concert Tour just from last Friday. So, and speaking of which, I do have a couple of results that I do want to get in before we turn the page toward the weekend. And I'll do that in a second. I'm just Essential Quality is 8-1, and Jackie's Warrior 20-1. Life is Good 6-1. Mandaloon with a little bit of a dent in the fender off of Saturday 20-1. Well, now this is a little out of whack. Midnight Bourbon, who wins the Midnight Bourbon, wins, and the LeCompte, and he's 30-1. So I'm not sure what. And Mandaloon 20-1. Medina Spirit, who was a very good second to Life is Good. I know, you know, he had to work to make up that ground. It's not like Life is Good was, you know, was giving it up late. It was Medina Spirit being ridden by Cedillo. So Medina Spirit, though, feels like a horse that, you know, is going to continue to stretch out and appreciate added ground. He's 12-1. He might get a little overlooked in here. I'm anxious to hear what Ed's thoughts are. You got the Cox Judmont Prate that made a splash with the maiden win, 30-1. Senior Buscador, who of course we're tracking after our conversation with Todd Fincher to start the year, of course off the Springboard Mile. Yeah, this is actually a very interesting opportunity. I think this is a fun group. So we'll see who Ed is zeroing in on. Before we get started, let me zip through and for the races that I really did not get a chance to yesterday or Monday. We ended up with full dance cards both days, but those Sunshine Million Stakes at Gulfstream on Saturday, Philly and Mare Turf, Bienville Street, Paco, Cam Gambolotti, Cam Gam, and CJ Thoroughbreds, Street Boss Mare. And this was, if you didn't see this, there was basically the entire field was was separated by you know, a length and change. Bienville Street takes the Sunshine Millions Philly and Mare Turf. The classic, Last Judgment. This was a maker with Jose Ortiz, wire to wire, and there was really never much doubt. Second choice. Michael Dubb and partners, including Mike Caruso and Steve Hornstock and Nice Guy Stables, involved in Last Judgment. And you know, this is such a Dubb and partner kind of a thing. This is a reclamation 5-year-old gelding that, you know, Maker has just been so effective with this type. You know, high price, $62,500. He just does this over and over again with these 50, 75,000, you know, made horses. Sometimes moves them to the turf and, you know, does well with that. But amazing. Cajun Brother for Shady Brook. And this is a homebred, the Cajun Breeze gelding, the 4-year-old. Manny Vasquez for Mike Yates, and this was the sprint. Wins by a neck over Extravagant Kid of Brendan Walsh. This was a good one as well, and paid a big number, 31.60. The turf, Venezuelan Hug, Luis Saez, Constitution 4-year-old for the Spadale family, and Randy Hill, Danny Gargan. Of course, and this was just favored, I think. Yeah, 5-2. Paid $7 for a Venezuelan Hug. So there was the stake highlights from Gulfstream on Saturday. There was also a nice maiden winner for the Roths, Ellen J. Foxwoods, and Bill Mott. And Mott is just really having a nice winter, and first-time starter by the name of Annex. Constitution colt that Bill Harrigan and Mike Pietrangelo bred. A first-out winner going a mile on the grass with Junior Alvarado. And actually got to check in about how Junior's winter has gone so far with the transfer down there. He had 9 wins going into the weekend. And there was one other maiden mile race. Pat Biancone for Sandy Bacon. Lucky Law. Irish bred, a no nay never, and Lucky Law with Johnny. Second start, stretching out from a turf sprint. So that was those were the principles from from Saturday. Yesterday I had mentioned that in passing about the Tampa races, speaking of Tampa, Seth Merrill later. I'm sure Seth will be dialed in. And there was the dead heat between Special Princess and Adios Trippy. Peter Walder with Adios Trippy, the Adios Charlie filly, and Special Princess for Walter Woodard. That was the Gasparilla getting going. And on the boys' side, that Nova Rags. I saw this. I didn't see the girls' race live. I saw the boys' race live. Nova Rags. And very confidently handled by Sammy Camacho. Wins as the 3-2 favorite. Nova Rags. Mott for Michael Shanley. And this is a homebred of Shanley's out of Wishful Splendor, the Smart Strike mare. So Union Rags, every expectation that this, you know, this was 7/8 to start the year. He was fourth in the Nashua, which was a lot to ask coming off the Belmont maiden breaker. But on paper, this is certainly a colt that should stretch out. So keep your eye on Nova Rags, and I know there had been, you know, some interest in him anyway. And then Trombetta, who, you know, upset, the big upset on Monday in New York, but in the Wayward Lass, he was the 3-5 favorite. So whether a big price or a short price, Trombetta, the Sonata Stables 5-year-old mare, Lucky Stride, Declaration of War mare. And that's a significant win for her. First North American stake. She had, you know, certainly last year, certainly kept nice company. You know, the Shoe V, and she was beaten 3 lengths by Latruska. You know, she tried some other, you know, smaller stakes, turf, dirt, different lengths. She's all right, this mare. And this was a very nice way to start the year. So next time we talk to Mike, we'll see what he's got planned for Lucky Stride. I gave you the Laurel, and people really loved hearing from Tanya, Tally Lynch, and her first career win. That was a lot of fun. I gave you the rest of that lineup and the other stake winners. So we can fold in quickly the California stakes if you didn't catch these. How about in that Sunshine Millions filly and mare sprint, Legs Galore, wire to wire. This for Phil D'Amato. And second choice, 760 in here. And this filly, this Byron filly, is on a very nice run. This is her fourth straight, going all the way back to the maiden breaker at Del Mar. Yeah, she beat, she's a Calbred. And this was a very, very nice sequence here. She's got the maiden win, then a state bred allowance, then open company allowance in October, and now she starts her 4-year-old season with another win. So 4 straight for Legs Galore, and from a fig standpoint, 86 buyer career best. So nice. William Sims, the owner breeder, an Indian Charlie mare, cashing tickets. The Leanne Howard Cal Cup Oaks closing remarks as the near second choice under Umberto Rispoli wins clear for Carly Gaines and for the Harrises. Harris Farms, Voronsky, Philly. And then on the boys' side of things, Big Fish, David Hoffman's Legacy Ranch. This is a Kerkorian bred by his stallion, Mr. Big. Last seen in the Eddie Logan, moves over to the main track in the Cal Cup Derby. Hadn't seen dirt since July of last year. Interesting performance, actually, from that standpoint. Again, you know, these are all the Calbred events, and you know, not a big number. I think future probably remains on turf, but wins it 4-1. So there you go. And how about the Unusual Heat Turf Classic? North Country guy, Mario Gutierrez, a pamplemousse. A pamplemousse 6-year-old, Baltus, for Nancy Massinio and Bruce Sands. This was this actually was a horse that Doc Allred bred. North County guy, by a neck over Heck Yeah, and Heck Yeah was a big number, 21-1, and 4-1 on North County guy. So there's most of them. Let's see, one more. The Valparaiso, the Cal Cup Sprint, and Brickyard Ride, the clubhouse ride for Craig Lewis. Homebred for Alfred Pace, and won easily as the third choice, paid $11.80. There you go. So there was the Calbred action, I suppose. Here, let me give you a couple others that from the weekend. We mentioned, of course, Mucho Unusual. Had a couple of maiden wins. Bondi with Squared Shady. We glanced at this race. I mentioned this Calbred race, this group. And Baltus with Disco Fever, also turf sprinting. These were both turf sprints. And this one, it's a Duron Pearson bred, a Tom's Tribute Philly Disco Fever, and was a nice price, $16.60, owned by Bedarian, Cambrian, and Nikashian, a prominent Armenian law firm in L.A. I love it. That's great. I haven't seen a fig yet, but there was that big allowance performance by As Time Goes By, the now 4-year-old American Pharaoh out of Take Charge Lady for Baffert and Coolmore. We should really check. We should check that. We talked about that one. Breaking the maiden at Los Al. So there you go. I wanted to get that done before it got too far afield. All right. So we can turn the page. Was there anything else? We gave you the New York. We gave that with Andy yesterday. And I mentioned already the forego from Friday night. So done. Let's get Pete in case we'll get going. And then Emily Gullickson this hour. Sid, top of hour two, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale. Ed and Seth Merrow. And you know, it's funny. I didn't hear back from Clovis Crane yesterday until fairly late in the afternoon. And Casey said when he tried him back, he said the phone's dead. Case always knows when the way the phone rings, if they're dead or not. And it was dead. So he apologized, and I promised him we'll get him back for a follow-up. And I specifically, in fact, I do owe quite a bit of aftercare conversation. Mike Blowen is overdue, and I want Clovis to talk about the program what he does with the horses that he basically claims, the horses that he keeps an eye on. And you want to talk about being responsible and tracking your horses, and he's done it a couple of different times with the horses that he then retrains for the Thoroughbred Makeover, which is just great. So we will. I had a couple of people say, "Are you going to get Clovis back?" Yes, I promise. So it was fun yesterday to have a couple of new faces that we hadn't heard from before. And I was watching. I knew what was going on with Tally Lynch because as it happens that when I saw that, you know, she first started, I asked Al Gold. I said, Al, I saw right away that Al had given her horses, and he told me what, you know, he was helping get her started. Gold and Hardoon, very nice. So continued success to her. And we say good morning to Pete Fornitz, Al. Pete.
Good morning to you, my friend. Happy New Year. So much going on. It's crazy.
I know. It has been already. I mean, it's well past mid-month, actually. It's 3 weeks in, right? It's nuts. So well, catch up? We got to do a catch up.
Absolutely. We had a great holiday season. Santa was very good to Perrin. And we've been dealing with the aftermath of that. I have my knowledge of recent pop culture music has not been stronger in many years due to the arrival in her stocking of the Just Dance game. There's been a whole lot of hits of the 2020s playing in the house and the late teens complete with dance moves. I'm finding myself with, you know, Dance Monkey stuck in my head, and that's been unusual, but a lot of fun, and we had a great time. We were here in Brooklyn. We did briefly and safely get to see my mom out on Long Island, and then zipped upstate and rung in the new year in Saratoga Springs, which is always a blast. And then basically, that was it. It was mellow. It was low key. But I have to say, being able to see it all through the eyes of a kid, there was no disappointment at all, and I'm ready to, it'll be fun, hopefully, by next season to be able to have a much more traditional holidays. But, you know, Santa Anita, opening day on the 26th, and we just turned the calendar, and there's been a lot of nose deep in the racing form and podcasting and back to work and, sort of excited / nervous about going soft today. We'll see. Hopefully that all goes well. And then huge stuff in racing, including the Pegasus this weekend. And it's kind of a dead run from there with Triple Crown prep action and all this stuff going on.
Well, and on that topic, in fact, our friend Papo Morales just sent me the note from Jack Sisterson right as we were going on the air. I guess True Timber is off, and so he's not going to make the field that they'll draw later this morning, or actually early afternoon, I think today. 1:45, I think I saw, was the draw video feed that they're going to be doing. So I suppose they're going to do a quick one, I guess, during the races, right?
Feels that way. Yeah. There is racing today, so they must be putting it in through. I know I was texting with Keisha Courtney earlier today, who's got her new show on our network, which is going to be a lot of fun, and maybe something we'll talk about in a minute. And I know she was looking forward to doing that. I guess they're just going to make it part of the show, but that'll be cool. That lean and mean is good for these draws.
Yeah, let me see, because if it's 1:45, and I'm just going to look at Gulfstream's schedule today, and of course they've been keeping to the pleasure of players, they've been keeping to their schedule. Yeah, there's a 1:35. Yeah, it's good for everybody else, throughout the simulcast world. There's races at 1:35 and 2:05. So they've got about a 15-minute window, it looks like, to draw the Pegasus field. And I don't know if they're going to do the turf race as well. But with True Timber out, this has really been a bit of a slow leaker in terms of, you know, retirees and then. You know, Charlatan opting for an international assignment, and it's going to be a fun card. You know, you got 7 stakes, so it'll still be
right.
But it's not it doesn't really have the marquee matchups that we've gotten the last few years.
No, it looks like it might be turning into a procession, in fact. But that's going to happen. A knock-on effect of the needed purse reduction, and then of course the emergence of of the Saudi race and the chance to run for all that cheddar that lured Charlatan away. But like you say, it's still going to be a good card. And, you know, if the race doesn't have if it's not quite California Chrome versus Arrogant, you know, it was never going to be that every year, I suppose. But
exactly.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And then there's the Pegasus Betting Challenge, which is pretty interesting. For folks that don't know about that, you can play that online. You can actually play at Gulfstream. I think there's limited number of seats. There were extreme seats at Santa Anita to play there. I'm pretty sure they're all sold out, though. If you have a question and want to call over to Santa, I'm sure they can answer that definitively. But you can play on your express bet, I suppose. In any case, $6,000 live bankroll event. It takes on a little bit of added intrigue potentially this year because this is the wrapping up of the NHC Tour. And, of course, this has been – we didn't talk about it much during the year, but it's a really interesting race and one like no other because, of course, in past years, it was – you had to have one live score in those counted scores. And had that been the case this year, this would be a foregone conclusion with Dylan Donnelly, who is in the lead quite rightly and deservedly. The run he's been on – in the NHC Tour, and the backstory this kid has. I'm rooting. I mean, I love everybody else up there. I'm rooting for Dylan. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Just, you know, based on all he's been through and the performance he's put on. But, of course, because of the pandemic, they're just making it all online scores. So just, I'm not criticizing, but just a quirk of the system. Now, you know, an online win is worth more points than his third at the BCBC, which in another year might have totally put him over the top. So it's really a scrum at the top of the leaderboard with, you know, I think five or six people, if they were to win this Pegasus contest, having a chance to vault to the lead. And there's a lot of familiar names up there, too. We've got Sally Goodall, Tom Blosser, Brett Wiener, David Wolf, Kevin Engelhard, Gregory Lewis, all over 20,000 points trying to chase down Dylan's nearly 2,300. So still a chance for some drama, and we'll have an NHC Tour winner at in the next few days. So that's going to be an exciting story to follow. And, you know, whoever wins, it'll be a great story. But Dylan in particular is somebody, Steve, who you'll want to have on, and I'll want to have on, and we'll get a little bit of his story. A player I became aware of. I think he might have been 21 years old when I met him a few years ago, being mentored by great tournament player Dennis DeCower. I met him in the Eddie Logan suite at Santa Anita, and then he had a terrible accident and was sort of out of the picture for a while, but has come back to tournament play, which sounded like it was an important part of his recovery, and just made an amazing run. So we'll see what happens. I'm rooting for him, and that contest will be very fun to see. See what goes on. First sort of big live bank event of the year, first of many happening in 2021.
We talked to Keith Shamblin yesterday and did a, you know, kind of a in focus closing out between now and Saturday. And, you know, there's online opportunities Friday and Saturday at Horse Players, two each. So four more qualifiers. But then, depending on how many people play in the Pegasus, there could be, you know, five, six more seats to close out the, you know, the field for August. And we had Dylan on earlier last year.
I got to hear that.
He was, it was obviously, I mean, the accident with the RV, and just it's an amazing story, and so easy to, you know, to be thrilled for him. But I said to Keith yesterday, he's had such an extended run of success. I mean, it's just been going on since last. You know, March, April, you know, I think we probably had him on in April or May when he was, you know, winning every other week. There's a few people that have, you know, that have also, I mentioned yesterday, Kenny Jordan, that has been on a tear and has, you know, moved very quickly up into the upper reaches. And, you know, there's also, you know, not just the overall Tour Championship, there was this little mini contest that they crafted for December and January, this Winter Challenge. And so you got people vying for the Winter Challenge and a $10,000 prize. And it looks like it's coming down to Jim Lisowski and Greg Lewis. Then there's the Rookie Tour, and the guys that are and gals that have potential to qualify, those that hadn't won anything this year but amassed points. And so what? The top 75 that are on the leaderboard are going to get seats as well. So it's a very big Saturday. All over the place.
I can't wait, following it from afar and just seeing it's going to be a very different year still, just for contests with the NHC. I mean, normally at this time, Steve, we're in full on mode. We're getting ready. The hotels are booked, planes are booked. Very different this year with the NHC being moved to August. But there's a robust tour robust series of online contests. From with ExpressBet getting involved, Myra getting involved later this year, I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities for players who want to get their teeth cut in the tournament world. And one fun thing is to follow along with what's going on in these bigger events, and this Pegasus contest is certainly one of tremendous notability.
Well, there's actually, for those that want to play, one more chance to play in for Saturday, there is tomorrow a $500 buy-in last chance for Pegasus seat. And so if you are going to play tomorrow, there's a tie-in. You know what, Pete, I got to ask off topic. There were a couple of notable musical passings, and I said when I get Pete on this week, I certainly had to ask. And the one that is a mixed bag conversation, the Phil Spector's death. But I don't know if people saw that Sylvain died from the New York Dolls.
Ugh, terrible loss, an unbelievable performer. I actually had just grabbed some of my Phil vinyl contributions that I have and getting ready to spin them today in memory. But, I mean, the Dolls they're a funny band. A lot of people, you know, they associate them with that whole scene. And don't go and think, like, you know, punk to the exclusion of, you know, old-time rock and roll. This stuff, I mean, this is straight-ahead great rock and roll. And it's, I think it's underappreciated by the masses because of, like, the rep and to use an out-of-era term, the sort of brand that they established in the 70s. For whatever reason, it became more of like a hip underground thing that didn't necessarily break ahead into, like, the full-on mainstream to the degree of, like, a Rolling Stones. But if you like the Rolling Stones, you're going to like the New York Dolls. Just, like, throw on the vinyl and listen to it. And, you know, obviously he was just a driving force and then did so much other stuff as well, being sort of David Johansen later on, his musical director, and, you know, making all kinds of contributions to music. So, yeah, I'm glad we get to talk about him more than Phil Spector, even though I do love all Phil Spector music.
Yeah, I know that, you know, the notoriety portion gravitated toward Spector's passing, but I caught Sylvain and wanted to include it, and that got me doing some musical searching, and I even pulled out my Buster Poindexter CD.
That's great. I love it, you know. I mean,
it was great.
You're going to be in the mood. It's not, you know, not going to necessarily change your world. But hey, and then, you know, that gets me thinking of David Johansen, the actor who was involved in so many good things. I think we could all agree on a show about horse racing, the most memorable of which is characterization of a horse player in Let It Ride.
Yes. Well, he was great in Scrooge, and wherever he shows up. But I remember when he reinvented as Buster Poindexter, that was pretty funny. And
I love that kind of stuff, though. That sort of career transformation. Maybe this shouldn't be a surprise to people who know my background and working with a man who might be referred to as the Madonna of professional wrestling, Chris Jericho. But that idea to just take everything you've been doing and what you've been known for, and maybe you've written yourself into a corner or whatever it is, and you know what? I don't want to just be doing that anymore. I'm going to do something completely different. And, for me, that's a perfect example of it. Another one musically that comes to mind is Tom Waits, who was like playing this one character and then just sort of blew it all up and reinvented himself and kept making great music and having a thriving career for years to come. And that's certainly true of Johansson as well.
No, man, we'll have to slip in hot or something from Buster. You know, it's funny because I've got a rack for CDs, one of those tall wood racks that you start to thumb through them. I mean, it's funny that the car I bought most recently, my Impala, probably the last CD player, in an American car, it just so happened that it had one, because it was a car that was used at the Louisville Auto Show. That it was sort of a display car that I ended up buying last year at Derby and at Bachman out on Hurstbourne. And I really appreciate that it's got the CD player. And every so often I've got like one of those leather pouches where if I'm going to be in the car, I'll put together, two dozen. And it's funny to be thinking of, playing CDs as a throwback concept, but it really is. I mean, you don't need them anymore, but it's just kind of funny.
They sit in a tough spot, right? They're not, yeah. It's not old school enough for, Gen Z to think it's cool. And it doesn't have like the tactile cool thing of vinyl have other attributes, but of vinyl or of even cassette tapes that I know have made a certain comeback amongst the young hipsters. But I don't know, maybe someday. Maybe
Daddy,
someday
what's this?
Yeah. Everything old is new again. Maybe someday.
Too funny.
We'll get there. We'll get there, dude. It is tough, though. It's kind of a, now that you can get such good. I kept on to CDs for a very long time, but now with what you can do with lossless audio in the computer, it's just a hell of a lot easier and without those other ancillary benefits. I go one way or the other. It's vinyl or it's digital pretty much. But I do, I'm looking right now, actually, Steve, and you can probably see him when folks see me in the Brooklyn Bunker on in the Money shows or on Sky. There are the four giant binders behind me. Those are all, that's a couple thousand CDs. Who knows if we'll ever be reached into again. But
I know.
Have the heart to throw them away.
Exactly. Well, Tina finally got me to... the DVDs finally are now they've moved from one storage area upstairs to the storage area on the back porch. So they're working their way out of the house very slowly. I can't and actually my Betamax and my Beta tapes. I kid you not, because I when I lived in Cincinnati, when I got to Cincinnati, Cincinnati was a beta town because of Steinbergs. The Steinbergs were a big Sony distributor, and so all the shops were like 70% beta, and so my first recording machine was a beta, and I can't throw it away. It's in the garage.
It's amazing that you still have it. My dad kept it for a long time. He was an early adopter with that technology. He was doing a TV pilot in like the late 70s and realized he was going to need to have this stuff recorded, invested. And he handicapped. He was looking at VHS. He was looking at beta. He knew the beta that you couldn't have as much on the tape, but it was so much higher quality. At the end of the day, he went with the trainer. He said, they're not going to beat Sony. We're gonna spend the, you know, whatever ridiculous four-figure sum of money on the Betamax, a decision we made fun of him for years after. But yeah, fond childhood memories of popping in the Betamax tapes.
Now, if anybody wants it, it's in the garage.
That might
got,
be worth something. Who knows?
I keep telling. To, yes. I keep telling
to stuff,
you that.
You know, it's possible. I wouldn't throw it away. Let's put it that way.
I won't throw anything. That's my problem. That's the issue we have with Tina, you know, getting after me about throwing stuff. I can't. I'm. She says if she hadn't met me, I'd be, you know, I'd be a hoarder, one of these people that, you know, they would find under, you know, stacks of stuff, you know, DRFs and you name it. I they're sitting here. I've got because I just I don't know. I'm I've discussed this. I'm hard pressed to just let go. I even tried what's her name? The organization woman. Does it bring you joy? Yes. Yes, it does. This
Marie Kondo signed off. Your old Betamax sparked enough joy that she said you could keep it.
That sparks joy. This matchbook from a restaurant from a dinner in 1987 on Second Avenue and 71st at Milanais that I had. They got a notation of who was there. This plastic football helmet I bought when I was 9. These all provide me tremendous joy. And Tina looks at me like there's something wrong with me.
If that's the case and you've got the room and it's not going to end a relationship, keep it. That's my advice.
Here's I'm looking across in my auntie office and here is one of those cheap cardboard posters that they affix to telephone poles.
Sure.
For a fireworks display at Sylvan Beach in probably 1981. And it's on the wall and I'm not getting rid of it. It's just funny.
I can see that. It's art. It's like a nostalgic form of art. And plus when you write your memoir, you're going to need all these things.
Unbelievable. Pete, I've got Emily Gullickson standing by. Let me give us a quick update. What do you got going? What's the latest to listen to and educate and entertain on In the Money?
We got a couple of new shows. Obviously, the quickest way to become a horse racing insider and follow everything going on in the industry is to listen to your show on SiriusXM and catch up with the podcast when you miss it over at SteveBick.com. But if you're looking for more information about the horse racing business, we've got two new shows for you on the In the Money Network. Acacia Courtney, who we mentioned before, she has relaunched the In the Ring Pedigree podcast, going to be covering the pedigree and sales world. And then we've just announced, this is a show that's been around for a minute called it used to be called the Horse Ownership Experience with Michelle Yu and Billy Koch. Now rebranded as the Owner's Box and coming to our network. And that will be a completely owner-focused show. So interviews week in, week out with various horse racing owners. They do a great job. They've had an array of guests, both very charismatic. Can't wait to work with those three talents. And do tell Emily I said hello, please.
Well, you did yourself. And the owner project that Billy and Michelle have done, that's got, you know, it's several years and it's been very, very helpful. It's a terrific primer. And, you know, the idea was to, you know, help people, you know, answer the questions about, you know, getting into the game and, you know, the intricacies and because it's involved, and it's intimidating. And the idea is to, you know, basically take that mystique and some of the challenges out of it. So that's very cool. They do a nice job.
I'm glad you mentioned that because we're going to migrate their entire archive over well, so you can go back and listen to those shows you're talking about.
Pete, I'm glad we got the chance to catch up, and I keep telling everybody, I don't know, nobody seems to know when they're going to see anybody next, but we get to talk, so that counts.
Definitely something.
Pete Fornatale, everybody, looms boldly on your Twitter and the In the Money Players podcast and team with tons to keep you involved. And Pete, we'll catch up soon. I guess we will, but we'll stay here because Emily's standing by, and I am looking forward to this. I've been looking forward to it. And I remember I asked probably last year when Ed was and the BrizNet offerings included Optics EQ. And I've asked Ed a couple of times. So in this case, with Oaklawn starting on Friday and knowing that Emily Gullickson is going to be featuring Oaklawn handicapping, I thought this is a good opportunity to get Emily on and for the first time, which is my mistake. And we welcome Emily Gullickson. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, thank you. I got your message like late last night, and I was like, is this a dream? I've wanted to go on Steve Bick's show for so long, so I'm glad it's a reality.
Well, and you've provided insights even long before the involvement and the origination of the Optics product. In fact, in a lot of ways, you were one of you're one of the great aunts of horse racing Twitter.
Yeah, I got on like right from the beginning. I mean, I met John out at Del Mar and just kind of got on from the project right from the beginning. I was kind of right in line with the way I handicapped. I kind of saw what he was looking to do and, could kind of bring my own kind of vision into Optics as well, which kind of just helped the product. So it's been great. I love it. Everything about it is just getting better and better each day.
Well, I did ask, I think I'm pretty sure that John talked about it at one time with me after a contest win or maybe even in Vegas, but it talk about the origins and what the concept is, because it's very, not tactile, but it's very visual and, it has a graphing concept, and it's different. Not unusual per se, but it comes at the handicapping process in a kind of a different angle.
It does, and then at the same time it doesn't. It's just sort of like the way that we normally play, it's just presented in a different format. So sort of the origins with it was like when John, decided to leave, hit the corporate world and become a full-time horse player, and worked his butt off, before his NHC win, taking all these notes and following all these tracks, and it was just sort of like, there has to be a more efficient way to do this because this is just a massive workload. But at the same time, it's crucial in order to be, a top player, in order to do this, whether it's professionally or, a successful weekend, player type situation. So that's sort of where Optics started, was like, how can we get this stuff into a way that minimizes, time for a player, is efficient. So in terms of it being different, it is kind of a different format, looking at pace from a plot versus looking at pace from maybe, raw speed figures or times or pace figures, I'm sorry, and times, or looking at notes versus having to kind of like create your own just sort of description of a race, having a more streamlined, like if you see a word traffic, what traffic is. It's not like stuff behind and between horses, and you go through this whole thing where somebody who's reading it from the outside might not be able to understand. But in terms of, a player kind of understanding where Optics is, sort of everything is the same, right? The way that you handicap a race, you look at a horse in terms of form, are they in form for today's race? That part of their form cycle, are they fast enough to compete in this race? Their speed figures kind of stack up for the level that they're at, class, are they at the right class level, are they making any big changes on that front? And then pace, obviously I mentioned Optics plot, does this race shape kind of set up for this horse? Is this a horse that's going to be compromised due to the race shape, things like that. So you're still looking at pace, speed, class, and form. You just have such a more efficient way to look at the data.
It's interesting that, so many of the, so many of new approaches to the handicapping side have leaned toward pace in terms of innovation. Certainly the Timeform US concept is pace driven. This is something that people are going to have to look at and go to your feed and you put up the plottings as they are as best you can. Emily, explain the presentation to people.
Sure. It is kind of different, but the way the optics plot looks, for those that have seen it either on Twitter or our website, or the Brisna article, I'm sure we'll talk about that getting into Oakland, where I'm kind of, able to go through the plot a little bit more horse by horse and representative of looking at a race way. But the plot itself, there's four quadrants. Then there's like kind of multiple ways to look at it. It's multidimensional. So when you're looking at the plot, just kind of straight up left to right, you have horses that are out in front to the first call. So those horses that are further left. At the first call, and then second call sort of on your y-axis, so sort of top to bottom if you're kind of looking at it that way. So when you start to kind of visualize the race shape, okay, these two horses are out in front, obviously, the one that's a little bit higher is going to have more speed, they're going to be able to stay on, but are they going to be able to finish? So that's kind of where the circles and squares come in, and it's all in relationship to each other. So you see these horses, whether they're represented by a circle, they don't have as much finishing, late kick than those in that race squares. And of course, that's relationship to each other. So if you have a circle in quad one and you have a square in quad one and all the other horses are quad four, which is like closers, you're probably going to have a best of the speed scenario. And you can kind of just, see that right away without having to, go through the entire field. It's just more efficient, right? And then it goes into playing where if all of a sudden that horse is, maybe the second or third choice, that's a great bet. So it's making your time much more efficient.
How quickly have players that have utilized it, how quickly have they been able to adopt and be able to incorporate it into their either into their overall process or using it as a standalone?
I would say fairly quick, and that's kind of based on our retention rate. It's extremely high. So players are obviously finding value with it and catching on pretty quick. We kind of offered it in a different way, which I think helps people in terms of doing like a weekly package versus, kind of pushing that more than a daily. Because it's just like, when you learn to play the races, it's like you have to practice, right? It doesn't click off the first race. You have to keep doing it over and over and over again. So having kind of those packages, giving people or, Friday, Saturday, Sunday players, by the time they get to that weekend, they've pretty much got, some concept, right? It's like if you're going skiing and you don't ski for a while, and then all of a sudden, like your first day, you're kind of struggling, and then you sort of work through it, and then you can kind of progress from there. That's sort of where we've seen players. So for the most part, I would say the learning curve is not that high, especially when somebody's willing to learn. I think that's a big part of it. I've taken people through it that aren't horse players, because I have some, friends that are not in the horse player world, and kind of shown them, and like messed around with plot, just kind of like real basic, and like, okay, well, pick a horse, and they've been able to pick it up like that. So it's not complicated. It's just more of like, are you willing to put yourself in a situation, kind of break the old habit and pick up something new?
The opportunity with Oaklawn, explain what you're going to do for the season.
Yeah, so this is actually the second year that I'm going to do this. I've been doing Oakland Park notes for Optics EQ, so following that circuit, all the horses day in and day out throughout the meet. And so last year kind of started new. It was sort of stemmed off of what I do up at Woodbine, where just kind of highlight some, spot plays throughout the day or look at a race and just kind of really break it down. They liked that work up at Woodbine, so offered to do that at Oaklawn, and it was really cool. I think people got a lot of feedback out of it. It's a tough track for a lot of reasons. I mean, it's a different track. You get kind of different weather. You get horses coming in from all different circuits. There's obviously no turf racing. So it's complicated. It's a shorter meet in some ways. It's more boutique. So, horses aren't seasoned there for, 9 months or whatever. So people kind of appreciated it because it was just offered more information than if you just grab like kind of a standard PP. You have somebody that's been following the circuit kind of in and out. So what we're doing with Oaquan this year, similar to last year, I'm trying to just kind of highlight some, maybe some value plays, some horses that might get overlooked. And then also, in terms of people, like you mentioned, like getting familiar with optics, I'm trying to write up the race in a way to not just be like, here's my pick, I like this horse, but to really like understand the process and say, I'm getting to this horse based on, you know, here's what I'm looking at the plot. Here's what I'm looking at the note. Here's this horse that's a vulnerable favorite. Here's why, you know, and trying to allow people to kind of understand that thought process, like showing your work in math and just giving the answer so that people can kind of start to learn. And then also, you know, assess my work, read it, and then go, I disagree with everything you're saying. I want to go a different direction. That's fine, too, you know. But I think that process is really cool, and horse players seem to respond to it.
One thing about you mentioned, you know, the lack of a turf course. So there's a lot of people that like the fact that they don't have to, you know, be sidetracked with turf, and that, you know, there's a certain pattern and a certain reliability to approaching Oaklawn, you know, year after year that people like. You know, if it just seems, I hear that so often. Some people, I mean, certainly say they wish that there was turf, because they're turf players, and they like the opportunity to incorporate, whether it's pedigree action and you know, moves to the turf. But there does feel like an Oaklawn, you know, coterie that just, you know, waits for this every year. And, you know, the racing has gotten, you know, better and better and better, as, you know, the purse monies have, you know, increased. Looking at these first two cards, it's obviously going to be another terrific meet at Oaklawn.
Yeah. It was a great meet last year. And I, again, looking at the first 2 days, looks like it's going to be great again. I fully enjoy it. I love having this opportunity. So, yeah, it's one of the meets I look forward to throughout the year.
Well, then let me, and I do want to ask you about, you know, some of your own personal things and affection for the game. But how about a quick hit on Friday, a couple of ideas going into, you know, the Smarty Jones and that sequence that runs nice. I printed out the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th.
I kind of highlighted three of those up on the Brisnet column that's posted. Race 6, it's a maiden special weight race, and there's a lot of horses in there that are capable to win. You know, they're coming out of Churchill Downs, they've had the experience around two turns, and then Brad Cox is a horse that's going to be stretching out, that's probably going to show speed in this spot, and, you know, seems quite logical. You kind of see what you're going to get out of those horses. I think that those horses make sense. I highlighted a horse called Tango Kylie, a second-time starter for Don Von Hemmel. I like this horse's debut from the aspect that it looked just like a debut race. You know, we want to give this horse a race. Physically, this horse looks like wants more ground and is getting that here. So it's just kind of one of the spots. I mean, it's 30-1 on the morning line. It's one of those, like, it's a stab, but it is a horse maybe, you know, could definitely pop in a spot. If not, you know, let's kind of keep a follow. You know, in addition to sort of the more kind of obvious type horses in that race, just kind of one to keep an eye on. Race 7 is another race. This is one that I kind of wrote up in terms of optics plot. So I think, you know, if people get a chance to look at that on Brisnet to kind of see the visuals and see, you know, the notes, how they kind of get into that handicapping. But, you know, Engage, when I handicapped this, I didn't have the morning line. I figured, you know, maybe would be the favorite, but definitely is the favorite on the morning line. Looks pretty legit in here. I think the distance change coming out of the Lafayette back to 6 furlongs is positive. There's also some other positive signs. He was very cold on the board that day. So just, you know, things to keep in mind just in terms of kind of that race not necessarily being the right spot for him. The race has been productive. True Timber came out of that race to win the Cigar Mile. there's some positives from that perspective. And then just looking at Optics Pod, should just get like a great trip. There's a lot of horses that want to be forwardly placed in that race. He can just kind of track off that pair. And I kind of paired up with Mucho, a horse that kind of looks like kind of the lone closer type horse, with those horses in that first flight kind of bunch up to kind of pick up horses late. So that was kind of my strategy there. It's always tough when you're doing this ahead of time and you don't have a tote board, because that's kind of, you know, that's how I play. Obviously being a player and kind of looking for value. So that leads into the Smarty Jones Stakes. Cowan is the favorite in here. He's coming out of Springboard Mile, has some class to him. But I still think there are some questions just in terms of, you know, two turns. I think Cattle River is really solid. Second choice on the morning line. I think there's value from that perspective. He is stepping up out of the maiden ranks and going to be stretching out to two turns. But both those things look favorable to him. He's been improving with each start. As good a spot as any, you know, to go the two-turn mile. He went the mile last out to break his maiden at Churchill Downs. Looked really good doing it. So I think he's really solid in that race. Not quite as upset at the second choice, but I'm more interested in him and Cowan in this spot. And if Cowan proves me wrong, I'll be okay with that.
Yeah, and we've seen that Ingrid Mason's going to scratch Lawlessness, or at least was entered back, which for Saturday.
He's an outsider
so,
in there, I don't think he wants to go that long. I mean, he's coming off a layoff here. He's been kind of drifting out the last couple times, so I wasn't really thrilled with the spot. We'll see where he lands.
Well, and I'm looking forward to a few, a few general conversations about Oaklawn the next couple of days, and bringing up Ingrid Mason. It does seem like she has started fast, typically. At Oaklawn year after year. It's kind of a notorious angle.
I agree. I'm also interested in following John Sadler, because he had just such a great meet here last year. I mean, all of his horses, they were firing, and they're all running, you know, speed figures that was like their tops at this meet. People can read into that what they will, but just in terms of kind of watching how his horses perform early on in the meet, he's sending kind of the same string, the same type of live runners, and I think we'll kind of get that feel early on. So that's just kind of one of those notes that I'm keeping in mind to start off the meet.
It's interesting, too, that in regards to Sadler, who, you know, had, you know, plenty of people had off years last year contributing, you know, the pandemic interruptions, making it hard for everybody. But, you know, Sadler was very quiet, and it does seem that might have been a signal that pendulum coming back in the other direction. You know, he had that 1-2 finish in the Astra on Sunday with Quick and
Hermaphrodite.
Yes, which one of the there's been a lot of conversation about the naming of horses of late, and that's one that we'd like to hear the backstory as well.
they were being a little cheeky before that horse made her first start here. She was actually entered against the boys, so I don't know what they were trying to be funny or what in that spot. But I mean, his meet, overall, because I follow Southern California too. I do daily selections at Brisnet for all the Southern California traps and do optics notes there, so I sort of follow. But I just noted, watching Sadler, how just what a difference it was. His horses performed at Oaklawn versus, out in California. He's known out in California, trainers out in California. It's like they're kind of streaky in some ways, like Baltus was crazy hot for the fall meet at Del Mar, and then went through Santa Anita, meet right before Del Mar, where he was just ice cold. So it's like following, I think recency is so important in horse racing in general, whether it's the horse or the trainers. So that's why I'm like, I try to follow those things and try to get on the upswing before everybody else, right?
Sure.
Because it's like, especially at Oaklawn, right? It's like, the barns that are going to take money, Diodoro, McKnight, Cox, you know, these barns are going to take money, but what are the ones that are just kind of like, that are going to come around and have a good year and, you know, try to catch them before everybody starts seeing, you know, the numbers in the past performances?
Well, and one of the things that that seems evident, there's almost on a daily basis, there's almost like two different cards. There's the cheaper races in the early part of most cards, and you know, the tens and so forth, and non-twos and whatnot, and also the Archie Bred events, and then there's, you know, the wider, you know, bigger money maidens and allowances and the stake schedule in the second half of cards. And so there's sort of these interesting trainer packages essentially.